Welcome, everybody, to the Spawn of Me podcast. This is episode 257 of our show. Want to give you all a shout out in Twitch land and podcast land. Say what's up, what's up, what's up. And thank you for all joining in and viewing and hanging out with us this week, as you do every week here on Twitch. I want to give a big shout out to my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow. It is the man who makes science look good, the man who makes math look good, the man who makes tutoring look good. It is Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How you doing, sir?
What up, what up, what up? All those things are goody looking, goody tissues over here. Can I be like the man that makes science goody two shoes, the man that makes math goody two shoes, mini froze look goody two shoes? I'm just trying to do something new, man. You know, I think it might work. I think it might work. Like it'll throw people off balance.
It threw me off balance because I was like, what are you talking
about? That's what I'm saying. And we can change spawn for good to spawn for goody two shoes.
Okay. See, that's reason. Okay. So, all right, I'm kind of down with that. That's kind of dope, actually. I kind of like that. I want that to be, maybe that could be our next effort. So, like, we'll raise money for cobblers.
Yeah, this is
so that they get so because I feel like it's a dying breed. Like, we don't have cobblers left in the world, so we can like do a fundraiser for them.
Dude, this is live brainstorming right here. I feel like they're cobblers, but like we wouldn't know where they are. But I bet if like. You know, a woman that wears shoes that wear out a lot, she probably knows where every cobbler is in like a 20-mile radius.
I can't front. Like Jill has figured out, she had these one pair of sandals that she loved to death. She was like, would never gonna let these things go. She like would always rock those things. And I remember the first time she asked me to take them to the shoe repair place that she had found, and the dude knew her shoe. Just by seeing the shoe,
he was like, he's like the shoe. He was like,
yo. He was like, oh, I know who. He's like, I know who this was. He had a really thick Russian accent, which I will not try to pull off.
No,
but he was absolutely like knew her shoe by just looking at it. I was like, yo, you have been like the relationship that has happened over the past couple years is stronger probably than our marriage.
I mean, I feel like finding a good cobbler or like. Person that does your cleaner and stuff, that is a relationship. It's like finding a barber, you know. It's like finding a barber. It's a relationship for real.
That's true. Well you spoke about Spawn for Good, which I'm happy you did. I want to thank everyone for tuning in over the past weekend. Spawn for Good was a huge success this year. We wanted to set out and raise $5,000 for the wonderful folks over at Vote Riders. As of today's count, we have raised $2,000 more than expected.
Sweet.
We raised a little bit over $7,000 for the wonderful folks over at Vote Riders. And I want to give a huge shout out to Sterling McGarvey for helping to co-collaborate on this, the wonderful folks over at Vote Riders. We had a quick thank you stream the day after everything happened on Sunday night. And that was fantastic. People just come by and we wanted to share our gratitude with them. And to thank you to everyone who participated, because without them, it was definitely, it would have been a harder deal to be able to get to the goal and then surpass it. So again, these are things that we hopefully want to use our platform for. It's one of the things that we feel like is one of the best parts about our show. And it's something that is something very different that you won't get at most other podcasts and stuff like this. So thank you to everybody who participated, everybody who watched, everybody who donated, especially to all the folks who donated. And we hopefully we'll do another one fairly soon, or maybe we'll do it on our actual time, which is over a Martin Luther King weekend. So big shout out to everybody involved.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch. I mean, unfortunately, I couldn't stream, but I was trying to duck in on – I think I ducked in on – almost everybody's stream. And I learned some cool dances from like Mary Kish and and like a shout out to Will Will Smith for introducing me to Human Fall Flat, which I was not familiar with, but is that game a fun co-op, like physics kind of weird gang beasts kind of game. It is really cool. So I was introduced to like a bunch of games, like Mary Kish was like playing Donut Country, which I had heard about, but wasn't as like a familiar with. So yeah, it was great, and like just knowing that it all went to a great cause was like really dope. I heard that like you, I think it was you or Sterling were playing some Forza, some Forza Horizon 4. So you know, which was like before it launched. So that's dope. And yeah, so yeah, it was really fun. And you know, just seeing the donations come in, I donated a couple of times, got some donation trains going. And then like my elite friends all came in at the last minute, like, oh yeah, like that thing that you were emailing me about, now I'll donate. So they all donated like Sunday night or Monday morning. So yeah, it was a great, I'm glad that you know, that a great organization can get like supported. And you know, it was just good that, you know, that I feel like it also helps organizations like Vote Riders to see, you know, the gaming community as a group to engage, you know.
Yeah, that was an interesting part of the whole setup for this event was Sterling was aware of these folks and had been donating to them already. But it was a thing that when we approached them together with the idea of like doing an actual stream for it, they really didn't have an idea of what Twitch was and how the gaming community could kind of rally around a thing with good people kind of backing it. And it was cool to be able to see them engage with, you know, the outer and greater gaming community in the same way, which was really cool. And I hope that they open up, you know, that ability to kind of feel like, you know, this is a thing that they can do again with maybe, you know, with us or with another outfit. Okay, Beast is gonna actually do a stream over the weekend. If you're watching this live, if you're listening to the podcast version of this, it would have already happened. But OK Beast was supposed to rock with us during the weekend, but couldn't. So they're gonna pick up and do a separate stream over the weekend as well. So definitely go check that out. But yeah, it was super fun. I love doing that stuff, and it definitely feels like, again, proving that politics and gaming can have some crossover in real ways, which is super dope and something that I hope that we get the chance to kind of continue to push forward on. If you're watching the show live, you will see that Brother Cicero is not here this week. He is still having another fake GIF heart attack in the lower left-hand corner of our in the lower left-hand corner of our stream. But he's a little bit under the weather. So we'll be
Yeah.
rocking with him
It
later on.
definitely is sick time. Like, I love fall, but one thing that comes with fall is everybody getting sick once the temp
All you need is
changes.
pumpkin
So
spice though, right? Isn't pumpkin spice the thing that cures all ills?
I feel like pumpkin spice is like the devil's breath. I
Spider-Man.
promise it's not a spoiler, but there is something in Spider-Man called the Devil's Breath, and I think it might be pumpkin spice, because like pumpkin spice is everywhere, right? So like it's like either like the Devil's Breath, or it's like, I forgot what the name of it was in the 1989 Batman movie with Tim Burton. Like, Joker put all these chemicals inside of like lotion and body products that made people like turn
Oh.
crazy.
Yeah.
With the Joker face and shit, that
Yeah.
could be pumpkin spice as well. All that shit in the Christopher Nolan movies that like a scarecrow sprayed on people to make them go like crazy, pumpkin spice. So you know, just when you get that PSL, just think about it. That's all I'm saying. And I
Oh
called it a
man.
PSL. That is correct.
You called it a
I
PSL. I don't know who are you.
did call
What
it
happened to
PSL.
Reef? What happened to Reef? I remember Reef is a good human
Yo,
being.
yo.
He didn't say PSL.
Sometimes between tutoring sessions, you gotta get that venti PSL, man, and just accept the consequences. It happens.
I can't front. I finally had one like 2 months ago for the first time, and it wasn't that good. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be better. It's not that good. It was like, it's like a facsimile of a pumpkin taste.
Yeah, well, but that's most Starbucks stuff, I think. Like, Starbucks, I like certain things at Starbucks, but a chai at Starbucks is not a chai. Like, it's a Starbucks thing. If you have a chai any other place, it's like much
Yeah.
spicier, it's much like darker, even the color of it's darker. Like, you know, like Starbucks's drinks are like their own views on that stuff, I feel like. It's like they're like interpretation of coffee and tea in Chai, and that's fine. It's just,
Yeah.
it's like anytime you go to like an actual like local coffee spot, you're like, oh yeah, this is how this stuff is actually supposed to taste.
I feel really bad, and we're going to switch off from actual RPSL discussion, but I feel really bad because I don't like most other places' chai because I
Oh.
like iced chai.
Oh,
Of what
see, I don't do a lot
I
of
like
ice.
iced chai. Yeah, I like iced chai, and iced chai from Starbucks is fantastic. It's just that I don't I, like that was the first thing I had in terms of chai, and now whenever I eat anybody else's or drink anybody else's stuff, I reference that first as my flavor palette. So my flavor
Wow.
palette is broken when it comes
So,
to
like,
good
even
chai.
in Portland, where I'd imagine there's a lot of Seattle's Best and stuff like that, they're
Yeah.
still on that Bucks chai, on that
I,
Bucks
well, I
ice
think I
chai.
need to go to actual places that do it for real, like actually steep it and actually do it the real way you're supposed to do it, as opposed to it coming out of a freaking box that just
Yeah,
says chai on it.
that's the funny thing. If you ever go and like watch the baristas, like when they make a chai, they literally get a box of chai concentrate and just pour it in there and like heat that shit up. Like that's what it is. And like, yeah, I go to a lot of the local coffee spots here and they actually make it, like you're supposed to.
Yeah. Grinding leaves in front of you and all that good stuff, like a weed chop. Anyway, we have to go move over to actual news, not the chai latte chronicles, which makes us sound really bougie. I feel like I need a ribbed sweater once I start talking about stuff like that. So we have some not great news in terms of the gaming world. If you were paying attention to Twitter and social media over the past week, you saw that the beloved studio Telltale Games laid off basically all of its staff except for 25 remaining members. I don't remember a studio that big in recent history kind of being folded. But there was a huge reach out for support for folks who were working in that studio. So many people who were looking to kind of, help other people who were in that space be able to kind of find more jobs or find jobs since they had just been laid off. And there was a mix of different reactions across the internet. A lot of it from the game dev community was always, about just how awful it was and how it brought up a lot of different conversations about, the way things actually work in the industry right now. That's a really loud thing to play. It's like that's what happens when you pick up a thing from an ad, and ads have like gunshots in it. Anyway, a lot of outpouring of support, a lot of folks who took that moment to talk about the state of the gaming industry in terms of people not getting their due, because everyone who got laid off, there was no severance, there was no backup plan for those folks. They didn't get any of the kind of support that you would usually see from an employer after that. Reef, I want to kind of get your thoughts about everything that happened and how you kind of ingested some of that news.
I think it's terrible. Not only, as you said, like no severance. Number one, a lot of the employers, like most of these places, are contractors. So they don't have to follow that. I have to give you this time and I have to, help that stuff. They just let them go. And they were still fucking hiring right up until this layoff. So there were people that just started like days ago, weeks ago. There was at least one person that moved across the country, moved their family, and got laid off. Like the health insurance gone. So it just sucks. I mean, I've seen this happen at a lot of companies that I've worked at, and at companies that my friends have like been at. And this is just being a bad company. Like this is, like I just refuse to believe that this was not known by the C-level people in enough time to prepare people, and at the very least have a hiring freeze and be transparent with your employees. Like you can handle this a lot better. Like if your company is imploding, it's not something that happens in a day. Like the CFO knows the financial stuff. Like the CEO obviously has like the kind of umbrella view. And they already had those lay those huge layoffs around when they were working on Batman. And I remember thinking like, man, like I'm surprised that they still got Batman out, because like that like in itself, You know, like they laid off 25% of their people, you know, so they got rid of like 90 folks, right? And you know, that was in late 2017, and I remember thinking like they're really in like trouble. My hope when I heard this was that, okay, at least internally they probably all knew and they were kind of prepping them, and it didn't go public, but every employee that has spoken out has said, no, we were all blindsided by this, you know? And I think, yeah, just like the people that knew about this and continued to run this company, continued to hire people, continued to bring something on, they should be embarrassed. Like it's a disgrace. Like they're like actively hurting people's lives for what? You know, like for what? Like this is just a lose-lose situation for everybody, for the fans, for the employees, for the, well, I don't know if the executives got payouts or whatever, but like I would think for their like reputations and stuff, it's like a loss to be part of a company that like went under as well. So yeah, it's just a shitty kind of like situation. And I don't even want to focus on the fact that, you know, we're in the middle of the Walking Dead like final season and that they're, you know, and that work is effectively shelved, because to me that's not the big story and that's not what I care about. I care about like these people that just, you know, 250 people, you know, PR folks, devs, artists, you know, like designers, like a narrative people, just let go with like no clue as to why or no prep time. It's bizarre and should not be supported in any way in any industry. This is not how you should handle people's lives.
There are very few times where, like, I'm usually sad when I hear that a company has gone under or people have been fired in that way. And I was sad during this, but I was really upset. I was mad because there's a lot of people that we know that we've met over the past couple of years from Telltale, folks who have been at that company. And as a company who has made beloved games, like, you know, the one of our first shows was Dave Fannoy, who, because of a Telltale game in The Walking Dead and playing Lee, was the impetus for, you know, us being like, hey Dave, can you come on our show and like be one of those people? But it's also one of those things that it feels like there's, and this is a part of the conversation, at least we've seen on social media, that this running narrative of the workers, the people who are making these games, are just so not taken care of by many of the companies that we enjoy the games that they make, that there has to be a fundamental shift in the way that the gaming industry works. You know, when we talked about it with Emma from Game Workers Unite a couple episodes ago, you know, they're fighting and striving to make that space better in a real way. But it feels like if you can just upend everyone's lives like this in a way that is both just callous and also, you know, detrimental to the legacy of the company, then what kind of, you know, brass is there at the top of most of these places? You shared a really good link that kind of runs down the timetable, the timeline of what happened within this particular outfit. And there's a bunch of multiple things that happened. There was a CEO that changed over within the time of, you know, on the 21st of September. Everyone kind of being given their pink slips and then giving like 30 minutes to have to leave the building.
30 minutes.
30 minutes to have to leave the building. That's just so just like uncaring. It's just like, how do you do that to people who have like put in so many hours? And sure, and there was a great hashtag that was out during the kind of past couple of days that was like Telltale Memories. And that was even more heartbreaking to see all the folks who did put in so many hours and put in so much dope work. Some people like shared stuff that never got out.
Right.
They like shared little snippets of little pieces of things that they were working on that will never see the light of day. There was a Stranger Things game that was possibly going to be coming out. That was might have been a thing.
There was Wolf Among Us season 2. There was you know, more stuff with Tales of the Borderlands and Game of Thrones. Yeah, man, it's crazy.
So I want to kind of dig into the fact. I knew you kind of brought it up, but I want to talk about the fact that the last season of Walking Dead, at first, when everyone was told they were going to get laid off, the company basically said that the game is in limbo. We don't think we're going to make the rest of it. A couple hours later, when there was a bunch of backlash from the community. Most of it was unreasonable, right? There was a lot of folks who were just like, well, what the fuck? Aren't you guys supposed to be putting this stuff out?
Yeah.
Why are you not putting this stuff out? We demand that you put this stuff out.
Yeah. All that entitled gamer shit, man. It's just entitled gamer shit, yo. Like, fuck your game. Like, 250 people are struggling right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if they landed a job the next day, it's still shitty to have to transition from, you know, from working on something that you love to being rushed to make a decision. And these are people with kids, families, illnesses, you know, taking care of parents, you know, all the normal stuff that adults deal with. And you know, like, yes, if Walking Dead, if, you know, because like Telltale put out an official communication saying that, you know, they got interest from other people to finish it. And I'm like, that's great and everything, but I would rather you like put all your resources into trying to pay these people some shit, you know, like try to give them something, you know, as like a thank you, not just a get out in 30 minutes. Like, and like, I've been laid off before, and yes, it can be harsh. Like, I've been laid off where they announce it and then there's like a security guard at your desk to walk you out, you know, and then you got to come back later. Right. But imagine that for the whole studio, you know, for 250 people. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, I can't imagine that. And I was talking to my mom, and like, she worked in the corporate office for Toys R Us for like about 15 years. And she told me like, yeah, like in all those times where like they went bankrupt and they sold stores and stuff, they always laid off like hundreds of people at like a time, but it was never a 30-minute thing. Like, the bosses would like let you know, like, your position will probably be eliminated. And like, they'd have weeks, sometimes months to prep for it. You know, like, that to me is what a company that is about their shit and wants to maintain their, you know, the respect does, you know, because at the end of the day, like, you're dealing with people. And when you screw over people, then I just lose all respect for you.
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's one of those things, and I took a peek into the wonderful folks over at Waypoints podcast this week, and they just brought up so many amazing points about, you know, basically just like what we need to do to kind of help upend all this shit.
Yeah.
And I would tell people to definitely check out that latest episode of Waypoint Radio. But it's one of those things too, when I think about it, I'm just like, I want to focus on the people who lost their jobs, but I also feel like on the other end of it, we have to figure out ways to make the communities that we are growing in these spaces better, so that this entitled gamer shit that then makes those people have to, because think about it this way too. So it's like, you have the corporation side of it, you have the upper management parts of it, you have the structure that is already there with the way the games are being constantly made. And then you have the gamer shit, which stirs all the pots, right? It's like, people are really excited about the last season, and then they upend everything and kind of share all this information up the stream to be like, well, we have an expectation for the stuff that we already paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes people get really antsy and have to push their workers harder and make unreasonable deadlines and make crunch happen and make all these other things happen. And I wonder, you know, what the conversation looks like when we try to talk about how we fix that side of the game. Like, I feel like you have to be working on multiple sides of it at the same time to make it better. But I feel like the result that, or I should say not the result, the part that we do in our small spaces to kind of make our spaces better, if there's anything that we can do to kind of change the culture there. And I don't know. I don't know if that's an answerable question. I doubt that it is.
I mean, for like us to change the culture, you mean like us individually, or you mean like just like the industry to change?
Like, I think us as individuals, we're kind of doing that through our own actions.
Right.
But I wonder what it looks like if there's any way to kind of like broaden out the conversation into one where we talk about, you know, you don't need that thing to come out as soon as you want it to come out, so that those things kind of filter themselves back. You know what I mean? Up the stream, where it's like, well, you don't have to have 17 games come out at the same time within a really short amount of time. You don't need all these things to kind of be a part of the ecosystem right at the one moment, so that it kind of you have to train gamers in a different way, yes, so they don't have these stupid expectations that they currently do.
Yeah, yeah, no, the expectations are dumb, but also it's not only the expectations, it's like, I feel like the sometimes the companies bend to those expectations. Like,
right,
we've seen companies, you know, freaking BioWare change, you know, changing the Mass Effect ending, and like you know, all the Gamergate shit, and like, you know, like, I feel like there's a way to do it. Like, there's a way to have a conversation. Like, I think, for example, the way that, you know, Bungie has been working with the community with Destiny 2, and the way, yeah, that Ubi's been working with the community with The Division have been good examples of focusing on the good feedback. Because, of course, there's always going to be bad, shitty feedback, right? But they were able, mm-hmm, to discern the good from the bad and really invite and have that conversation. But I think that, you know, company, you know, when there's shit like, hey, like, give us our game, I think companies should honestly ignore that shit. Like,
yeah,
I don't think this customer is always right. You need to listen to every customer. Like, I just never believed in that shit. Like, everybody doesn't deserve to be listened to. Like, because I feel like there's a lot of people that bring up this stuff and they don't intend to have a conversation. They're just yelling, you know, they just want to just be frustrated. And it's like, that's fine, but a company shouldn't be making their decisions based on that. Because there's always going to be entitled people. Like, you'll never be able to stop that. To me, it's the reaction of the media and the press of, like, giving them coverage and of the companies actually, like, responding. Like, just, like, let them yell in a corner for all I care.
I wish that there was a way, too, that we could have someone from the industry come on the show and talk about this part of the game. Because I feel like it's a thing that I hear, you know, behind the scenes that is just, like, you know, as community managers and as folks who have to manage, you know, brands and things like that, it's a very difficult thing to have pitchforks come out at you and at your brand and at your company on a consistent basis. And especially with games being so visible now, to be able to kind of do that work in a way that you feel safe. But I also feel like I would just love to hear someone full throated just be like, yo, we don't play into that business. Like, I've heard it in small bits, but I haven't really heard it be like a public thing, and I understand why. Like, they don't want to put that spotlight on themselves in that same way, that bullseye on them in the same way. But it just sucks that it feels like the industry always kowtows to the loudest, shittiest voices a lot.
Yep.
And they put out a statement. So Telltale put out a statement, basically like we said, saying that maybe, you know, potential partners might be able to pick that thing up and redo it. And since then, there's been a class action lawsuit that's come about from an employee who's put in it was for unpaid wages and benefits, basically, that says that they owe him and other staffers. And I hope that they get every drop of money that they get.
I hope so, too. I really do hope so.
I hope so, because that's fucking shitty. And then the last bit of news so far is that the season pass was removed from all major digital storefronts, including PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And they're trying to figure out how to pause sales until.
I wonder if they're going to refund people like me that bought it.
Right.
But I doubt it, because apparently they don't have any money to refund people. Like, it's just such a screwed up situation. Like, it seems like for a while that, like, they were just, I guess, hoping that this would be a major blockbuster, that Walking Dead season 3 would be like Fortnite or something, you know, like just be a phenomenon that would rescue their apparently badly run company. And one thing that GameSpot article also mentioned, which I totally like forgot about, is that there was this article on The Verge that kind of similar to the recent one about Riot was talking about how toxic the environment at Telltale was.
Really?
In terms of, you know, of just the harassment, but like also just the crunch. That the crunch at like Telltale, which a lot of people think of as like, you know, as like an indie company where they kind of value that stuff. They were still crunching like 18-hour days, you know, to do stuff. So it's not just something that affects like the big AAAs. It's like, you know, even a company like Telltale, you know, still falls under that. So,
word. If there are any folks who listen to the show and you want to come on and tell your story, we would be happy to have you. And again, like, we're sorry that all this terrible shit happened to you and the rest of the folks that work there, because it's just fucking awful.
Really bad.
We're going to move on to the next story of the week, which is, if you've been paying attention, if you are a streamer on Twitch, then you have noticed that a couple, I think maybe a month ago or so, there was a blog post on Twitch that basically talked about the community's feature of the site going away. And there was a lot of, not backlash, I wouldn't say, but there was a lot of concern about what does this mean for visibility? What does this mean for discoverability? And what does this mean for, you know, kind of being able to keep communities together that have already kind of built themselves and given themselves good, safe spaces? They kind of supplemented, or they're kind of not supplemented, they kind of moved things around and changed it from communities to just having tags for things. And a lot of folks are kind of just worried about that. They felt like they're kind of doing it a disservice to folks who are in marginalized groups. I've heard the folks over Black Rose Gamers talk about this, and some other outfits as well. The folks over at the Cookout group, who've been doing stuff. Shout out to Denny Von Doom, and the rest of those cats, who are doing fantastic work. Have you had any chance to kind of like think about what's going on with the tagging stuff, Reef?
I know you don't stream as much as you used to. Yeah, like I can understand why they wanted to sort of revamp the communities, because there were chances to have a lot of like redundant ones, and the communities were like sort of administered, so you couldn't just add it. Like you kind of, you know, like there was a way to actually get it like removed. I believe they could only put three on your profile as well. But at the same time, you knew that if you went to a community, it wasn't just bullshit. Like you couldn't join a community and then just, you know, to troll people, you know, like it was possible to actually, not be on it, you know? But with the tags, number one, they're curated by Twitch, so they're very generic, right? Like they make up like the tag names, like, you know, action and, you know, and like that kind of stuff. The only benefit to that is there is like a tabletop RPG tag, which I know a lot of the D&D streamers are excited about. But if you wanted a community, like say like there was a community called the Cookout and a community called Black Girl Gamers and stuff, you can't have that anymore because you have to use Twitch's names, you know?
Yeah.
And like, also anybody can add it, you know? So now you can have people that can jump in and just troll, you know?
Right.
It's unfortunate because if they curate it, that means that they're always going to miss something. And this like article mentions that like there's like not tags for like gamers with disabilities. Like there's like not like ones with like horror and battle royale and simulations. Like you're never going to get everything, you know?
Right.
Again, as like somebody that worked as a data analyst for many years, I understand the desire to standardize tags because like then you can run your analytics and your reports and like you don't have like a million communities. You like only have like, you know, your 50 tags or so, and you can do all your reports and make predictions and analyze and stuff. I understand that. But I think that, you know, that there really needs to be more of a conversation with the community about it, because, you know, it's going to eliminate things. And I think that it is possible to not throw out communities completely. Like you can have like communities and tags if you wanted, or like some sort of like combined version. I think what like people were really upset about is the fact that they just completely ditch communities and replace it with this thing like you have to categorize your stuff the way that that we are like telling you to. So I understand it from an analytics perspective, but I don't really like it as a viewer of Twitch. I don't stream as much as I used to, so I'm probably not going to be using them as much, but I don't like it as like a fan of watching people's streams being able to like search out content.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to lose a lot of the kind of niche groupings that you were looking for, and it's going to get so diluted that it's going to kind of be meaningless at some point, because you just won't really know where to go. Because it's like, I want to find black streamers, right? I can't type in black streamers Like, there's no way I can't do it. It doesn't work. I just tried it.
Yeah.
Nope. You know what I mean?
Nope. So and I bet you Twitch would be worried to include any kind of like racialized thing. So like, yep. So they're probably never going to have something for like Latinx streamers or native right. streamers or black streamers. And that sucks because these communities were like safe spaces that people could go and chill and like find other people. And now that part as it stands now is gone. Now I personally hope that they kind of see this backlash and kind of change it. But to be honest, that'll probably only happen if, you know, some of the partners and stuff like that really kind of bring that up. So I don't know. We'll see.
One last point that a part of the Kotaku article talked about was that streamers were using this as a way to kind of build, you know, as a stream team, a way that you'd be able to kind of find the folks who are, you know, associated with you or under whatever that community would be. And since that is only available to Twitch partners, that is another reason why it is detrimental to visibility and to, you know, curatorship and trying to get people in spaces that they can be seen in real ways. So, yeah, I'm hoping that they figure out a good middle ground for that. I don't know why they just wouldn't bring back communities and have the best of both worlds.
I really think it's that analytics thing, man. I really think it's like somebody that had to stare at the back end of several SQL things that had a mess of like different data types. I was always like, just standardize it. Just give me 100 things that I can do all my crazy pivot tables and stuff off of. I guarantee you that's the motivation for this for sure.
Can you teach me how to do a pivot table?
I sure can. I don't know if this show is the place for it, but yeah.
Okay, cool. That's all I wanted to know.
I use one in Google Sheets to manage like almost my entire business, like all the financials and payment plans and sessions and stuff.
Damn. So, yeah. I wish pivot I didn't have to do that stuff. Hashtag pivot tables. That could be a good good stream tag, just pivot tables. And then you could just be on stream doing that and showing people how to do math. Why don't you do a math tutor in stream? Why don't you do that?
Look, man, it's in the plans, actually. Keep your fingers crossed. It's definitely on my little short-term plan. So, yeah.
You heard it here first. We broke the news.
You broke the news.
I broke the news because I beat the news.
it's like that and like my goody two-shoes stuff. So those are two breaking news today.
Spawn on me. I'm spawn for good goody two-shoes. Spawn for goody two-shoes.
Spawn for goody two-shoes.
Coming to a city near you soon. I think the kind of mind-blowing announcement for this week was Sony finally getting themselves together and joining the I need a pivot table for my mouth. joining in the crossplay fun with them them starting a beta for Fortnite crossplay, which will now open it up so that everyone can now play together. Xbox One, Switch, PC, Mac, and mobile.
Yeah, and the PS4. Phones, which is nuts. Like, it's crossplay with your phone too.
so it's kind of dope, right? So actually, there's an update to the story too, which was also on Kotaku. So like the major kind of part was like Xbox and Nintendo were already kind of like okay with this on the Fortnite side of the fence, right? Which opened up the conversation about like, can this be a thing that everyone gets at some point down the line? Sony was like, no, we don't want to do it. We were kind of holding off on this because we don't really see that there's a need from the community and the community doesn't necessarily want it. But, you know, trying to push forward and trying to get the industry to kind of move forward together and give everyone a place to play in the same spaces, everyone kind of looked at Sony like, yo, what y'all gonna do? And since this beta got talked about, there was an update earlier, I think, when this article went up, which was yesterday, the 26th of September. So the Kotaku folks reached out to a bunch of third-party folks, because I think that's the conversation, right? It's like, we doubt that Sony is going to do first-party stuff. The third-party stuff is kind of up for grabs, right?
Yeah, I mean the beta is with Fortnite. It's a third-party game.
Right. So, and I think most people were thinking about it in terms of Destiny in the first part and Call of Duty as being the ones that people were thinking about. But also, it says that, let's see, So they reached out to major third parties to see if their games will start incorporating PS4 into their crossplay offerings. Psyonix, makers of Rocket League, currently allow crossplay between Xbox One, Switch, and PC.
Yeah.
They sound into it, but they asked Sony if they were still down for it.
Yeah, I mean,
they're kind of like on the fence about it.
Essentially, all the third parties are like, "Yeah, that sounds great, but Sony aren't letting us do it yet." And that makes sense. Like this Fortnite is a beta. I think that they want to look and make sure that everything is good, like before they kind of roll it out. But actually, way before the Fortnite thing, you know, Rocket League and Minecraft both had crossplay, you know, with like a PC and Xbox and Switch. So like Fortnite is actually like the third major game, and obviously the biggest one of the, well, I guess is Fortnite bigger than Minecraft? I guess so.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So like, I mean, and they talked to Activision about like Destiny and like a Black Ops with their blackout mode as well, you know, like, they talked about how they, you know, Blizzard has Hearthstone crossplay on some other platforms, but not on the PS4. So, personally, I don't think Sony needs a beta. Like, I'm kind of like halfway between congratulate them and also like a little frustrated that they're patting themselves on the back. Like, yes, world, we have finally, like, the internet is ready for crossplay with us. So here's a beta. Like, I feel like just fucking open the floodgates. Like your netcode is fine. Like, just fucking do it, you know? And I think people would, like, rather have it. And I mean, okay, people will complain if there's bugs, for sure. But right. I think that at the end of the day, people would be better if you do it and there's bugs than you do this beta for however long and then go back in your boardrooms. And I don't believe this is a technical thing at all. I think they're thinking about finances and they're thinking about all that, you know, all that shit about brand and all that stuff. That's where I think the real thing is. So I don't want to pat them on the back too much because I'm like, great, now just fucking do it. Like, you don't need a beta. Just do it. I remember Psyonix literally said, like, we just need to flip a switch to have crossplay Rocket League. You know, like, just do it.
Here's the part of the conversation that I want to kind of poke at, right? Is we've seen this console generation basically just all be in Sony's favor.
For sure.
Microsoft has kind of bowed out at this point of the rest of this generation. They're looking to, you know, the next iteration of their boxes. They talked about it at E3 as that being the next thing. The interesting part about the news cycle and the way that all this kind of works, which is really interesting, is if and when Sony hits the button that's like, all right, so we've gone past beta and now we're going to just open it up, like you said, to everyone. So that crossplay is a thing that all third parties can do. They're going to get a really interesting level of gratitude from the gaming community, which I think is kind of not necessarily the right move. I think if you really want to give love to people, you really want to be giving love to Epic Games, and you really want to be giving love to Microsoft, because Microsoft in all of these spaces has been way more forward thinking in this generation than Sony has in a lot of different ways. Game Pass, the smaller boxes, maybe the Scarlet box that's actually going to be a thing will be announced at some point, maybe at XO18 in Mexico City. The adaptive controller. There's been so many different things that Microsoft has not gotten credit for in this generation.
Yeah,
that it kind of sucks, right? Because it's like Sony's going to take the air out of the building by being like, "We did this thing," and they're going to get all the credit when all the credit should go to Microsoft and Epic for making that stuff happen, and Nintendo, for being open about it.
Yeah, it like reminds me of like how people always say how when like Apple releases a phone, it has features that, you know, Android and Google have had for like however long, but they don't really get the credit because they don't, I mean, they trumpet it, but obviously they don't have the same marketing panache that Apple does. So it's sort of like,
right,
oh shit, like there's cameras like that. And then like somebody like C with his like exploding Samsung device is like, yeah, like, I've had this before. So yeah, I think Microsoft, you know, they don't get the props, agreed, but also they're like a huge, enormous company that doesn't just do games. Sony, I think, is becoming more and more of a games company.
Yeah.
So I think Microsoft is fine kind of like riding this, the generation now, but I do wish they got more props, because not only is Game Pass dope, but the fact that now you can like subscribe and get an Xbox with Game Pass and
right?
just finance it, like that's never happened before. I mean, no. That's like incredible to me. That's like the equivalent of like back in the day going to Blockbuster and renting a system for like some absurd amount. I think I did that with like a TurboGrafx 16.
Oh my god, you're probably still paying on that TurboGrafx.
Like rented it from Blockbuster. Because hey, I needed that bonk, man. I mean, I needed bonk. Some bonk in my life. You know, and a Blazing Lasers and Bomberman, which was actually good on a TurboGrafx. they are really doing some truly innovative stuff. My hope is that they're doing all this now, so by the time they drop their Scarlet or their new stuff, we're going to benefit from all this stuff. You know, all the learnings mm-hmm. that they have from like debuting this on on the One, I think is really, really going to like benefit for sure.
Yeah. I'm hoping that, yeah, like you said, I hope they finally get the due that they deserve, because they have been doing a lot of really cool things that haven't really gotten the limelight because Fortnite has sucked up the air for everybody's stuff. And the bigger AAA games have kind of soaked up the air for everybody's stuff too. If they can just get a first party game to come out, that's dope. Then this conversation will probably change a little bit, but until I guess the next 2 years from now, we won't really see anything in that space that's really going to give them the bump that they need yet. But yeah, give Epic and give Microsoft some love, because they deserve it for helping to kind of push the generation forward, even from behind, which is nuts. So that's super dope. Mm-hmm. That was the last story for the show, I think, right? Oh no, we were gonna talk about what we were playing too.
Yeah, exactly. We were gonna talk about our gaming for the week.
Yeah. What were you been messing around with?
So I beat Spider-Man.
Oh shit.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like I can't say enough good things about it. I think, you know, I was lucky enough that I stayed away from all cover. I didn't read any reviews. I just basically was going off of what I saw from the trailers, from the E3 trailers, because I already knew that I wanted it. It was my game of the show from E3. So I think if you paid attention, it would have been easier to be spoiled at some of the appearances, at some of the characters that you control and that kind of stuff. But I didn't know any of it. So yeah. all I knew from the trailers was that Sinister Six was like somehow in it. But man, I was so surprised. It's the most courageous narrative I've seen out of a Spider-Man movie or game. Like what they do with the characters, the kind of dialogue, who survives, who doesn't. The motion cap and like acting is on like Naughty Dog levels
yep.
of incredibleness. Like there's one thing where like it gets really close up to people's faces and you can like see all the details and the wrinkles, and man, it's just, I mean, like the final boss fight is probably one of the most like emotional boss fights I think I've had in a long, like, I don't want to say ever, but
oh, man.
It's definitely close. I mean, just like, man, it's just, they build up to it. I feel like they treat Mary J as like it's her own character with her own motivation. She's not a damsel at all. And yo, it is phenomenal. I know there's been a lot of criticism about, yeah, it's just a really good open world game, you know, but it doesn't really do anything to like, you know, kind of revolutionize what an open world game is. I think a lot of that is like coming from, you know, people that have played, you know, Breath of the Wild, these other games that have like really tried to do something really different. And this one doesn't as much. I mean, I remember my first 3 hours I played, I was like, wow, this is really good. But I'm gonna go back to Forsaken, you know,
yeah.
Because this is just another really good open world game like Horizon was, you know, but when I came back to it and I got into the meat of it, which I would say is maybe like about the 5 hour mark, I couldn't stop playing, and I didn't play Destiny again until I beat the game.
Oh, wow. Much.
And yeah, it is from beginning to end, it is phenomenal. It will absolutely be in my contention for game of the year. And I was listening to the spoiler cast on Kinda Funny, and you know, they like had one of the devs from like Insomniac on, and The game took 3 years. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I would expect this game to be a 5-6 year game because of the detail. Like, you can tell people love this game. They love the character. The voice actor for, like, a Peter, spot on. Like, it's just, like, this, like, I saw people sharing this, and I wasn't quite sure until I beat it, but I think it's right. The narrative and dialogue in this game is way better than it has any right to be. Like, huh. It is, like, if you've seen Spider-Man Homecoming and, like, you were like, you know, this is the best I've ever seen it, like, I would say this is up there for sure. That's, I would say, cool. In, like, a lot of ways, I would say it's better than the story told in, like, a Homecoming. It's just, it is so great. I can't, like, it's one of the first games in a while that I'm thinking about trying to platinum, which I usually never do. Huh. But, like, the unlockables in the game all have their own story, and the side missions add to the lore. Like, man, this game is dope. If you have a PlayStation, it's a absolute must buy. Absolute must buy. How's your experience been with Spidey?
It's been really good. Like, I'm still on the Forsaken train, just because I'm trying to get my light up. But it's just like, man, I've been wanting to play more of it, and I keep inching along, because once I start, I don't finish for like 3 hours. Like, I need to play and keep going, because the collectible stuff is a thing, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, is a thing I didn't expect to really care about, but I care about it a lot in this game, which is weird. So I'm slow playing it in a way that I kind of want to finish it just so it's off my plate now. So I need to kind of like bum rush through some of it. But I'm really excited at every new thing that I get to play around with, and like new ways to kind of fight enemies. And I really love the stealth missions. Like, I like those a lot. Not the ones where you're kind of controlling people.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm not a big fan of those stealth missions. I mean, I think they're good, but they're definitely not my favorites.
I mean, when I say the stealth missions, I don't mean the ones where you're, I don't want to say it because it's
a spoiler. I know which ones you mean. You mean like the ones where if you're where you're Peter, and if you're detected, like it's
done. Yeah.
Like you had to use the perch takedowns and
yes,
the impact webs and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like those I like because those feel like Batman. You know what I mean? Those feel like Arkham Asylum.
Yes.
You have to go around and kind of tag people and then kind of figure out how to kind of remove people from the situation. I like that a lot. But now I'm kind of just running around trying to get as many suits as I can so I can take a whole bunch of pictures. Because that's what I like the most.
So good. And let me tell you, you fucking game people, like, pay attention to how this game lets you, like, use any power with any suit. Like, that decision right there, to me, makes a game so much enjoyable if you like playing, like, the fashionista game. Because I could put any suit on, and the power that's associated with the suit I could use with anything. So, like, I used a lot of these, like, electric gauntlets.
Yeah.
Which are really cool, and I could be in my punk rock Spider-Man suit or I could be in like the original like homemade suit. I mean, it's just, man, like it's so good. So like that's been the majority of my time because I probably spent, I don't know, probably like a good 30 hours I think in that game.
Yeah.
I would say because it is a meaty 3-act story. So the, you know, and there are times where Peter says like, hey, I'm waiting for this, so I'm gonna just go and solve some crimes, you know, and like that's the only way that you can upgrade your gadgets and your suits and like that kind of stuff. And man, I would love to talk to someone that tried to mainline the game, because I feel like there's no way I could have done some of these later levels without having fully upgraded gadgets.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's a tough combat game, I think.
Yeah.
They really, really amp it up when they introduce new enemy types. And I feel like if I didn't have my, like, 10 web shots and my 4 spidey drones and my electric webs that, like, translate to other people and that, like, if I didn't have that, I'm like, man, that game sounds really tough if you don't do, like, the side kind of content. So
yeah.
I'd be curious to hear from, anyone that like felt like they were kind of underleveled when they got to some of like the last parts of the game. But wow, fantastic. So yeah, that's been the majority of it. The rest has been Forsaken. So you know, I've been creeping up. I'm still not raid ready yet. I don't think I will be for a couple weeks, which to be honest is a fantastic feeling. That I have this like thing to work toward. You know, I think it's like dope. But you know, the end game world, like the dreaming city has like changed again in like week three. So now there's like this like cool little dungeon mission that's really, I haven't gotten to play it, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it. There's new exotic quests. Like the dreaming city looks completely different. Like there's like taken like bubbles all over the place. I mean, it's just, oh, what an exciting game. You know, it they just props to Bungie. And one thing I really didn't understand how their like daily missions reset, because they're not really daily missions. But when I took like 3 days off from it to like beat Spider-Man, I came back and all my dailies had stacked up. So I didn't really lose out on my on like getting like my powerful gear and stuff. So yeah, I was like really happy about that. I'm about like, I don't know, what am I, like 445 or 446 light. Sorry, no, 545, yeah. So I think the raid recommends 550, I think. But because those encounters go up every time, I probably w won't jump in until I'm closer to 570 or maybe even like 5 like 80. But yeah, there's just always things to do. Gambit, as I tweeted out, I think it's the best new like first person shooter mode since like Kill Confirmed, I would say. It is just amazing. It's worth the price of Forsaken itself to me. It's just, I just can't stop playing it. Like it's really good. And yeah, it's just props to Bungie, man. They have resurrected this like game. Obviously there's still gonna be people that complain. There's still gonna be people that race through the content and then complain that there's nothing there. But I think if you play like a normal adult, meaning like you know,
You go to
if
the
like,
bathroom.
yeah, even like if like a you go hard and like trust me, before Spider-Man, I was going pretty, I was staying up almost every night till like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. to like play this game, you know? And like I'm not even anywhere close to the level cap. Whereas every other, you know, for 4 years of like a Destiny, I'd be at the level cap in like a week, you know? So I think that they really said, look, we got to keep our like, I don't consider myself a hardcore player because I don't play like, I mean, I see some players that just, I'm amazed at how fast they're able to like get through things. But like, I'm definitely not like a casual player, you know? And yeah, it just continues to scratch my like itch of shooting aliens in the face.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm finally raid ready. I'm
Nice.
like 562 on my main character. My second character is probably just getting around 545 right now.
Nice.
I did the first two parts of the raid the other day, which
Ooh,
was super
sweet.
cool.
Now, did you do them after seeing a guide, or like, or
I don't
like you
believe
try
in
to
that
go in blind?
watching blind shit. Fuck that. I have too much time. I don't have enough time to even in my fun employed state, I don't have time to do all that shit. But the weird thing about that is, like, even if you watch people do it,
Oh
there
yeah, still
is
some of
no
them do it.
different. There is no like real preparedness part that you can do for the
Yeah.
little intricacies of what each
Yeah.
part of the raid is. And
Yeah, I think the first raid where that applied to me was like King's Fall, when like you have to jump on the ships. Like I remember watching these videos, it was like, yo, until you're there, like you will still fuck up over and over again.
Right now, the bane of my existence is Gambit, and only
Ooh.
because of the sleeper simulant gun.
Yeah, I just hide. Like I like when I hear the like invader thing, I hide and they'll come to me. Like that's how I was able to, I actually got the five hand, the like hand cannon kills like before they like change it on like invaders for the Ace of Spades quest, because yeah, I would just hide. Because yeah, yes, the sleeper, like they did say that they're gonna adjust the aim assist on it. Though I'd be curious to see how they do that on console, since console has very generous aim assist. I know on the PC they can do that a lot easier, but yeah, like sleeper and gambit is absolutely ridiculous. It can one shot you to the body while you're in a super.
Yeah,
like it just makes no
sense. Across the map. Like yeah, can't even you can just see the person's name and get a kill. It's like it's that bad right now, which like, is so yeah. Basically, yeah. It's like I just lost 15 motes. Fuck. So that is a part of the thing, and then the two parts of the raid that I did, the first two sections of it, it's really good. It's such a smart thing. The thing I love about the Destiny community and about the way the raids kind of work is that multiple people will do the raid differently. And they have different naming conventions for stuff. They have different, you know, like systems that they build for themselves so that they can understand it and then pass that information along to other people. Like those things are really cool to see the like, you know, the lore of the game I don't necessarily care about as much, but the like lore that people build to get through stuff in the game is pretty cool.
Like all the call outs and stuff. Like this is the snake facing right, fire breathe left.
Yeah, like for real though. Like that kind of stuff is the stuff that I really enjoy now. It's like, oh yeah, like that's a thing. It's like, what's the you like right now? It's like, okay, you have to go shoot U's, you shoot infinities, you shoot down snakes, you shoot up snakes. Like if you haven't done any parts of the raid or seen it, you have no idea what the fuck I just said. But it's super cool that people have figured out the ways to do that stuff. So between Spider-Man, Destiny, the one other thing I've been playing has been Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
You have?
Yeah. Ooh, I've been playing that. Been playing that since late last week. I've been playing that off and on.
I want to hear about this.
So Assassin's Creed, so I have to apologize to everyone at Ubisoft real fast, because I was in the camp of, we don't need another Assassin's Creed game so
everybody
fast.
Everybody was in that camp. I was in that fucking camp.
Were you? I thought you were in the other camp. You were like, it's fine.
I mean, they took several years off to make Origins. I don't want them to rush into a fucking another one. Like, no. When I saw it, I was like, it looks great. But at the back of my head, I was like, just wait.
Yeah. What has turned that for me has been the fact that the protagonist that I have picked, if you're not familiar with Odyssey, you can pick a male character or a woman character for your story. Picking Cassandra has made that game totally different for me in my head. And it was at first something that I didn't care about as much. But now getting a chance to play it, I said this on Twitter the other day, and I fully believe it, and I feel like it's the thrust that's going to continue to push me forward within this particular game, is the fact that it feels like and makes me really excited that I'm getting a game that makes me feel like I'm playing Xena, like Xena the Warrior Princess, in an actual game form, because of how dope Cassandra as a character is. I can't say a lot because I'm still under embargo, but... Yeah. Having another strong woman lead in the Assassin's Creed universe is such a refreshing thing again, to be able to be like, oh, I'm looking at these male characters that I'm fighting in a different way because I'm playing a woman character. I'm like, I'm like attaching the things that I have in my own brain about the societies that we live in currently, and I'm like taking that shit out on dudes. It's an interesting way, like, you know, pulling real life stuff into all the stuff we're talking about, like having the Kavanaugh trial be a thing that we saw today go through and have all those conversations about, you know, misogyny and about all the things we see. I'm like killing the shit out of motherfuckers because I'm like looking at Cassandra in this way that she's like, she's the Spartan. And she is like ripped and she's cut up and she's like doing the stuff that all the other characters that I've seen in the Assassin's Creed universe do before. But because it's her, it is such a different mindset for the way that I am tackling things. Where interestingly enough, I am way more brutal with her than I was with What was the last character in the last in Origins? I can't remember his name.
Bayek.
In Bayek. Like Bayek, mm-hmm. I used him in a very stealthy way. Because that's, you know, one that's he's part of this assassin's clan and a part of this thing, a creed as they would call it. But
some kind of creed.
It is a creed. He's the Apollo Creed. But with Cassandra, I'm like actually taking all this like energy about the world around me and funneling it through her in some, I don't know if, I'm not gonna say it's a weird way, but it's like in this way that has a reflection of just like, yo, I get to be this really dope woman who is super powerful, yeah. And she gets to have this autonomy and be able to do all these things in this game. I don't know if that stuff translates yet to the actual story bits yet, mm-hmm. Because I'm still fairly early. But what I like about her character is that so far, all the things that I've seen is that she's caring. She's also has this really interesting just like persona about herself. Like she still is trying to figure out herself in this story while also being like cutthroat and killing motherfuckers left and right. Like she kind mm-hmm. of like her character kind of should, you know what I mean? And that's been really mm-hmm. refreshing. That's been kind of dope. It has definitely changed the way I play that game. It has definitely changed the way that I look at that character. And it makes me give a lot of props to the folks at Ubisoft. I don't know if she's a fully fleshed out character yet, but from what I'm playing so far, I really dig playing her. And I don't think I would have ever played as the dude anyway. Like if I have the option to play as a man or a woman, I will usually mm-hmm. pick the women characters anyway to see how it all plays itself out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did the same thing in what was it, Syndicate, the one in London where they had like the twins with the twin it was like Assassin's Creed Syndicate, I think it was in London, and like you could choose between the brother or the sister. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does it feel like Origins? Does it feel like its own thing? Like I know you're early, but like is that I don't think that's embargo breaking to say.
No, I don't think it breaks like embargo. It doesn't break embargo. I would say that the combat feels very, like if you played Origins, you will feel very comfortable playing mm-hmm. Odyssey. I feel like it does a couple of things that loop the systems that were already there back in good ways. I also really like the way that they have kind of split your gear up. I like the way that they've done that. So one of the things they've done that was really cool is they have basically broken up your stats. So like you have mm-hmm. an assassin stat, you have a warrior stat, you have a hunter stat. So like it's like one affects your bow, another one affects your melee stuff, and the other one kind of affects the in-between like stealthiness of you in that space. Mm-hmm. And all those things are like kind of spec'd out to the gear that you get. And you can do these things called engravings, which then you can add a statistic to a piece of gear that you already have. So it's weird. It has like this RPG element to it that is mm-hmm. interesting in the way that you both look aesthetically, but also the way that you kind of maneuver yourself in the trees that you want and kind of the play styles that you want. Another part of it that I find really cool is that, and I haven't seen this kind of play itself out just yet because I'm playing it in the same ways I usually play these games. But if you do certain things, like the world will react to you in a different way. And I don't feel like that was a thing that happened really in Origins per se. So I want to play around with some of those systems too. And I'll report back once embargo was over with a full review here. But everything that I've played so far, like it looks beautiful. It's not one of those things that you just kind of just look at and be like, okay. Like the oceans feel better in weird ways. Like I feel like there's more full of sea life, which is a thing you don't really interact with.
They're pretty good in Origins.
Huh?
They were pretty good in Origins.
They're good in Origins, but they feel like a little bit even more full of life, if that's a thing. Like there's there's one mission that I will talk about, and I don't think this breaks embargo, but you basically fight a shark. Ooh. Which is nice. Cool.
Is it a Sharknado?
No, it doesn't spin in the air, but it's okay. it spins in the ocean, which is a cool like beginning quest, which is like a cool like chilled out side quest thing where you go like fight a shark.
Nice. Okay, because I was like maybe the real Assassin's Creed, like you go back far enough and it was an assassin that created the first Sharknado.
I mean, only if it has like 2/3 of the cast of 90210 will that count. Like, I think that's the way that we know. Like,
look, man, shout out to Ian Ziering, man. He out here getting that check. I'm not mad at Steve. I'm not mad at you, Steve.
Steve looked like a Templar too, though. If you really think about it, he looks like he would be a perfect Templar too. I can see it.
Hey,
but
man, if they ever make another Assassin's Creed movie, I know they made the first movie. Maybe Ian Ziering will be in there.
Oh,
maybe
God. I want to see him jump off a shit. I want to see nothing. I want to see him jump off nothing. But so far, like, I'm really invested in the world, which, again, like, a thing I did not think that I would be coming off the heels of Origin.
Yeah, so close.
Origins, which I still haven't finished.
Oh, man. It ends really well. Yeah.
I need to finish that. Again, bucket list, right? I mean, not bucket list, like pile of shame stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Do you know if and I don't know if this will be in your copy, but do you know if they're going to have a discovery mode for Odyssey? Have you heard anything about
that? I don't know. That I'm not sure. I will have to double check within all the stuff. And again, that may be under embargo as well if there is.
Okay, yeah. I really got into that for like Origin. I played hours and hours of that. It's really, really good.
Yeah. So I'm really digging it. I think that again, it is the Xena game that I've always wanted, so I'm super excited about that. And I'm excited to get more time in with it. And we've got a code for Forza Horizon as well that I have to check out, but I can't yet because I have to wait for my data cap to re-up. Because I went over my terabyte this month. So I can't stream it. I can't play it. I shouldn't even be streaming right now because my bill is going to be high, but we'll figure it out at some point. I think that's it for this episode, episode 257. Besides one last point that we wanted to share with everyone at home and in podcast and Twitch land. If you've noticed over the past probably like a month or so, Tanya hasn't been on the show with us as regularly. She is amazingly busy with everything that is going on with I Need Diverse Games. And all the wonderful things that she's been doing in the gaming industry. She had that fantastic showing over in London. What was the name of that? I keep forgetting what the name of it was.
I forgot the name, but like it's a museum exhibit on a gaming that she's a part of.
Yeah, and it was super dope, and it was super fun to see her do all that work in there. But she's always pretty busy when it comes to being on the show, and you know, we decided that the best move for both parties was to kind of split ways so that she can kind of do the work that she's been trying to do and not have to worry about the extra burden of doing our show. And it's sad because, you know, we love Tanya, and Tanya's brought a really special and important part to the show, and we're sad to see her go, but we also want to make sure that we're definitely keeping tabs on all the stuff that she's doing and supporting her and supporting any diverse games. Like, we want all of you at home to do and continue to do that work, because she is doing something very special in the industry. And something that a lot of people are not trying to pick up that baton, and she is running with it full speed, doing dope stuff with it. So want to give her mad love. Want to give her a whole bunch of shout outs and make sure that you're checking out her streams, twitch.tv/CypherOfTear, and checking out all the work that she's doing over at I Need Diverse Games. Mm-hmm. Any last words on that, Reef?
No, I mean, it just sucks because I hate to lose her perspective. You know, I feel like she made our show a lot better. She, you know, addressed issues and brought up content that, you know, we've been missing, you know, because of our backgrounds and stuff. So I think it sucks. I think, you know, you know, like some people, you know, they just have a lot of other projects and everything doesn't always work out, you know. So I'm definitely going to continue to support her stuff. Obviously, I'm continuing to do like the Rivals of Waterdeep stuff. And we're doing a new Star Trek show also starting on Sunday. So I'll still be with her on the RPG side, on the tabletop side. You can continue to check both of our social media channels to make sure that you're up on those shows that we do on Sundays. So, it was a great run, but unfortunately, you know, we had to stop. So,
Yeah.
So and there's always me, C, and Ka at this point.
Yeah. And there's always a chair open to come back as a guest and come rock with us and tell us all the wonderful things that's going on in her world and all the things she's working on and doing and stuff. And, you know, we always have a seat at the table here for her. We don't want to end the show on a downer, but, you know, them's the breaks in some of those ways. But definitely go check out all of the work that she's doing. Like I said, make sure that you're paying attention to all the things on her social feeds. And give her some love out in the world and make sure that you are supporting all of her dope work. Reef, before we get up out of here, can you give folks the social media business, please?
Sure. SpawnOn.me, the main website, all our shows, pics, all that good stuff. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/SpawnOnMe, on Facebook, SpawnOnMe Podcast, Instagram, SpawnOnMe Podcast, Gmail, SpawnOnMe Podcast, if you want to send us a email message. We broadcast the show live on Twitch on Thursdays, 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern, at twitch.tv/SpawnOnMe. And you can also listen to our audio show if you search your podcast reader of choice for SpawnOnMe, because the audio version is also released normally around Tuesday, around that time frame, on the week following the live broadcast of the show. And if you want to go above and beyond with your support and support us financially, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/SpawnOnMe. You can give as little or as much as you want. And it helps like support our software, hardware stuff, our travel, and really just trying to make the best show that we can for everybody out there. And I will also say, even though our Spawn for Good for like a Vote Riders is like over, if you didn't get a chance to like donate, feel free to still donate to them. They're still doing great work, and we know that the midterms are coming up soon. So, you know, we want to get people out to vote, like regardless of, you know, politics or sides or whatever like that. The important thing is that more people are like out there voting and not kind of hampered by these, arcane like voter ID laws and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, check us out at those platforms.
Perfectly said, Brother Reefington, and definitely check out all the stuff that he's going to be doing in the near future as well. I'm sure those things will get announced when he has time. Pivot Table is coming to you very, very shortly.
Yeah.
So thank you to everybody again for rocking with us this week and every week. Thank you for coming and checking us out live on Twitch here on Thursday evening, 7:30. You can do that again next week as well. And definitely, like Reef said, check out all the places that we'll be doing all the things. And until then, we're going to say peace. We're out until next week. Peace, y'all.
Peace, y'all.